Lesson 14, Social Problems, 1. Part A, Listen, Write, and Speak.
Exercise 1. Listen to the dialogue. Then choose the best answer to each question you hear.
Mrs. Partridge, I understand that you are very concerned about the housing situation in Britain.
Indeed, I am. The government itself admits that there are more than 2 million houses which ought to be pulled down at once. It also admits that there are another 2 million in such a shocking state that it would be a waste of money to repair them.
What do you mean by shocking state?
I mean houses that are in such a bad condition that they're permanently damp. Or houses where you'll find as many as 5 families sharing one tap and one toilet.
But what about all the good things that have been and are being done? What about the rebuilding of whole parts of cities like Sheffield and Birmingham and Coventry? And not to mention the new towns.
That's all very fine and splendid, but it's only one side of the picture. I'm simply saying that we're not doing enough. We can feel proud of what is good, but surely we shouldn't be proud that, for example, Glasgow is sometimes called the biggest slum in Western Europe.
What you are saying, in effect, Mrs. Partridge, is that the housing in this country isn't worthy of a welfare state.
Exactly. According to government figures, there are less than 20,000 homeless people. But thousands more are living in such terrible conditions that they ought to be classed as homeless. It isn't that these people can't afford a reasonable rent. There just aren't enough houses.
Whom do you blame?
The government, for not providing enough money, and the councils, for not spending properly what there is.
Aren't you being unfair to the local housing committees? Many of them do wonderful work.
I agree. But that doesn't excuse councils that are inefficient and don't take enough interest. Don't you think it's shocking that in modern Britain there are still families who have nowhere to live? Do you think it's right that whole families should have to sleep in the ruins of empty buildings or under bridges or in railway station waiting rooms?
But there are excellent hostels where they can go.
In some towns, perhaps, Mr. Pollard. But things are very different in many of our Midland and Northern industrial cities and in parts of London. Even where there are places, some of the state-run homes for the homeless are less comfortable than prisons. In any case, my point is that we shouldn't need so many hostels for homeless families because there shouldn't be any homeless families.
Mrs. Partridge, I think many people would say that you are exaggerating and drawing attention to the worst housing conditions instead of looking at the situation as a whole. Would you agree that you belong to a pressure group which is trying to bring pressure on the government to do something about the housing problem?
If that's what belonging to a pressure group means, the answer is yes. But I'm not exaggerating. Housing is the most serious problem of our welfare state. If it weren't, would we hear so much about that excellent charity, Shelter, which does such wonderful work in finding homes for the homeless?
Question number 1. What is the main topic of the interview? Question number 2. Mrs. Partridge said that many houses are in a shocking state. What does she mean? Question number 3. What does Mrs. Partridge blame the government for? Question number 4. Where does Mr. Pollard think the homeless people can go? Question number 5. Which of the following statements is not mentioned in the interview?
Exercise 2. Listen to the dialogue again. Summarize the views of Mrs. Partridge and Mr. Pollard.
Mrs. Partridge, I understand that you are very concerned about the housing situation in Britain.
Indeed, I am. The government itself admits that there are more than 2 million houses which ought to be pulled down at once. It also admits that there are another 2 million in such a shocking state that it would be a waste of money to repair them.
What do you mean by shocking state?
I mean houses that are in such a bad condition that they're permanently damp. Or houses where you'll find as many as 5 families sharing one tap and one toilet.
But what about all the good things that have been and are being done? What about the rebuilding of whole parts of cities like Sheffield and Birmingham and Coventry? and not to mention the new towns.
That's all very fine and splendid, but it's only one side of the picture. I'm simply saying that we're not doing enough. We can feel proud of what is good, but surely we shouldn't be proud that, for example, Glasgow is sometimes called the biggest slum in Western Europe.
What you are saying, in effect, Mrs. Partridge, is that the housing in this country isn't worthy of a welfare state.
Exactly. According to government figures, there are less than 20,000 homeless people. But thousands more are living in such terrible conditions that they ought to be classed as homeless. It isn't that these people can't afford a reasonable rent. There just aren't enough houses.
Whom do you blame?
The government, for not providing enough money, and the councils, for not spending properly what there is.
Aren't you being unfair to the local housing committees? Many of them do wonderful work.
I agree. But that doesn't excuse councils that are inefficient and don't take enough interest. Don't you think it's shocking that in modern Britain there are still families who have nowhere to live? Do you think it's right that whole families should have to sleep in the ruins of empty buildings or under bridges or in railway station waiting rooms?
But there are excellent hostels where they can go.
In some towns, perhaps, Mr. Pollard. But things are very different in many of our Midland and Northern industrial cities and in parts of London. Even where there are places, some of the state-run homes for the homeless are less comfortable than prisons. In any case, my point is that we shouldn't need so many hostels for homeless families because there shouldn't be any homeless families.
Mrs. Partridge, I think many people would say that you are exaggerating and drawing attention to the worst housing conditions instead of looking at the situation as a whole. Would you agree that you belong to a pressure group which is trying to bring pressure on the government to do something about the housing problem?
If that's what belonging to a pressure group means, the answer is yes. But I'm not exaggerating. Housing is the most serious problem of our welfare state. If it weren't, would we hear so much about that excellent charity, Shelter, which does such wonderful work in finding homes for the homeless?
Part B. Listen and relax.
Directions. Listen to the song Nobody's Child and sing after the recording.
Children play alone.
Part C, Further Listening.
Directions. You are going to hear a short passage once. Listen carefully and choose the best answer to each question you hear. People used to build houses that fitted the climate of their areas. In desert regions, for example, many people built houses with very thick walls, which served a useful purpose. In winter, the walls absorbed the sun's warmth during the day and radiated the heat at night. Desert people were relatively comfortable in their homes at all times because they built them to fit the desert climate. Then the supply of fuel for electricity became both cheap and easy to get. The effect on housing was immediate. People began to build their homes according to fashion instead of utility. During that time, houses no longer reflected the availability of building materials or climate. Houses with steep roofs could be found in the tropics, the warm regions of the earth. Even though these roofs originated in snowy regions of the world, heavy snow falls off a slanted roof. Another example is the use of glass. Houses made almost completely of glass could be found in very cold places. Yet ordinary glass does not insulate well because it neither keeps out cold air nor keeps in warm air. As long as fuel was cheap and easy to get, people could build any type of house any place. Nowadays, people are no longer building any type of house any place because fuel is no longer cheap. In addition, more and more people realize that fossil fuels, such as gas and oil, must be conserved. There are limited quantities of these fuels, and therefore people must make an effort to save them. Even some people who can afford to pay high prices for fuel are choosing to build energy-efficient houses. They choose not to waste fuel. Housing is beginning to show both the availability of building materials and the climate of the region again.
Question number one. What does the passage mainly discuss? Question number two. What can we learn from the passage about desert people in the past? Question number three. How did cheap fuel affect housing according to the passage? Question number four. What type of houses is not mentioned in the passage? Question number five. Why must fossil fuels be conserved according to the passage?
This is the end of Lesson 14.